On the takeaway, then on Tuesday's All Things Considered, by happenstance, we had already planned today's program. Easterbrook has written a book called The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America, in which he argues for reform in a number of different areas, including the bottom line. He points out that the National Football League is listed on the tax books as a nonprofit. Clearly, that isn't true, and most NFL teams receive public subsidies claiming that they need them to keep the game or their stadia competitive and enjoyable. They may, in fact, need public money, but how would we know? For, as Greg Easterbrook points out, teams never open their books to the public. This week, Charlotte is playing host to a conference on the topic of sports teams as city partners, and we've invited some of the participants to join us for a similar discussion on what having these major league sports actually cost a city and whether or not cities are getting the bang for the buck they deserve. Dr. David Swindell is the director of the Center for Urban Innovation and an associate professor in the School of Public Affairs at Arizona State University. If his name is familiar to you, it is because he's been on the show more times than I can count in the past when he was with UNC Charlotte. Welcome back to Charlotte. Welcome home, David.
Thank you very much.
How's Arizona?
It's warm.
Yes, a dry heat, though. Michael Cantor is a project manager with Sterling Equities and Sterling Project Development, who has consulted for a number of professional sports franchises and municipalities with regard to sports facilities and economic and real estate development. Among his clients, the Green Bay Packers.
Go Pack.
Yeah. No partisanship there. Welcome to the show. And Dr. Mark Rosentraub is the Bruce and Joan Bickner Endowed Professor of Sport Management at the Center for Sport Management at the University of Michigan. He's been studying and writing about all of this for more than 30 years. Thank you for being here as well. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Why this conference? Why here? Why now?
Well, it's part of the conference is the Southeastern Conference on Public Administration, so we bring a lot of professors and academics together with practitioners to talk about how we can help cities run better. And one of the topics that we're talking about, we're having a special event tonight at 5 o'clock, is on sports and how cities and sports teams can actually work together for the greater good of trying to, you know, foster economic development. Community spirit.
There is a greater good?
Oh, yeah.
So you're already on that side of the coin.
Well, there's a greater good, but there's also that can be achieved, mm-hmm. and that's really the question that we're exploring today.
Now, I don't know whether you have worked with sports teams in cities or whether you just look at it. You have?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all three of you have done this, and all three of you, at least the two of you I know, Dr. Weintraub and Michael Cantor, have worked with several major league teams in several major league cities, and with those cities as well. I'm going to short-circuit the conversation because a lot of people are dubious about the value that we get from this. Do you think there's value?
Well, there are good deals and there are bad deals. there are some cities that do the job well, and that's part of what David's tried to organize here is to look at the ones who've done it well.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who have not done it well tend to get a little bit more publicity. For different reasons.
Give me an example of a city that or a team that hasn't done it well.
Well, there's certainly a lot of criticism that's justified, as your guest earlier this week talked about the deal involving the Minnesota Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, noting, for example, that the NFL is a nonprofit organization. Of course, all that does mean is that they distribute their profits to their franchisee holders that we effectively call the clubs, mm-hmm. who, by the way, do pay all the taxes. The commissioner, by the way, while he works for a nonprofit organization, pays the same income tax that any other resident of the city and state of New York pays. So you have to separate what I call fact from fantasy.
Okay.
So the teams are paying money. Making the statement, for example, that the teams don't open up their books, well, they have no reason to open their books, just like you don't open up your books to everybody anyway. But the point of fact is we know enough about the financing of every team, revenue streams, things like that. There's an organization called Forbes that puts out a list every year, and they're uncomfortably accurate. So we do know exactly what the revenue streams are, what the income has done. So Minnesota maybe didn't do the best possible deal. Columbus, Ohio.
The team didn't, or the city?
Or the city and the state.
Okay.
Columbus, Ohio, mm-hmm. had an extraordinary deal. The Arena District has been a financial boom mm-hmm. to the city of Columbus. That one time, sometimes people don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about, you know, the bad and the ugly. We're going to talk today about those who have taught some very valuable lessons about how to do it well. San Diego did it well. Mm-hmm. Los Angeles did it well. Those lessons need to be better understood so that when you go forward, you don't make some of the same mistakes.
I think the importance is in framing the conversation. I think the conversation too often gets put immediately as these deals can never be good or they're always bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much project specific. There's not one magic solution to all these problems. Cities and states are all unique. Regions have differences. So you can't put the framework for one deal that's worked necessarily into every city or municipality. It's really project specific. And so any bland or greater statement that's saying all bad or all good is going to be inaccurate.
How's Charlotte done this? I mean, we have an NFL team. We've had two NBA teams. We're moving this minor league baseball team downtown. How have we done it? Has it been a good deal?
Well, we've done pretty well. I mean, if you look at when before the Panther Stadium opened, the previous sports facilities were all located all around the region. You had the mm-hmm. motorsports out in Concord. You had the Coliseum down south of the airport. There was really no coordinated development going on downtown for that. But once the stadium came, that became kind of a galvanizing agent that facilitated a lot more development. And now then, you see much more concentrated effort in driving citizens and attendees to events in the downtown core. And you've seen over the last 15, 20 years, the downtown is completely different.
Yeah. Well, that's due to many things.
It's
due to the arena being downtown.
Again, they drove that specifically downtown. The baseball stadium driving that downtown is going to create more of that. The parks, the museums, all that sort of stuff that has come since Panther Stadium.
Right. Well, I'm not sure. Has the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center, which has I can't count the theaters in my head, 5-6 theaters in. We have more theaters in
more than we should
10
for
square
our population.
Blocks than probably Manhattan does. It's unbelievable. But that, along with the museums, along with Epicenter, along with the arena, along with the 10 Sundays or whatever it is that they have the games at the stadium, have created a new city.
Yeah. No, it's been very good. And, of course, the people who have been involved in those decisions and making the deals have been very cognizant of that. I mean, there was a vision for Charlotte that mm-hmm. was that was spawned in the 80s and was executed and has been carried out quite well.
And many of these projects, not all of them, but many of them had their naysayers. The Whitewater Center, which is located way outside of town and which has had financial difficulties, had some naysayers. The NASCAR Hall of Fame didn't have so many naysayers prior to its being built, but now it does because no one's going to it.
But it looks good.
Yeah, it looks good. But it seems like it never ends to a lot of people. Yeah, it's one thing to put money into a project and it goes up and the teams come in and they play and everybody's happy if they win. But the Panthers have been here for a while, and now you know that we're putting $87.5 more million dollars into a refurbishment of their stadium. Now, these are multi-billionaire owners. It's a multi-billionaire, multi-billion-dollar project. This NFL team, why? Why do we have to keep sending them money?
Well, you have two sets of questions that you need to deal with. I mean, one is a question again about what's the return on the investment. I don't know enough about this $87 million addition.
We're buying scoreboards and escalators.
We're positioning ourselves to go after that.
Technological enhancements and improvements to the stadium.
Exactly right. It's a 17-year-old facility. I mean, it has to be upgraded. So this is an investment in trying to position the city, I believe, in trying to go after the Super Bowl.
So when you look at when we talk about the team here, Charlotte's one of the cities that we always hold up as actually did the deal right when it started.
Okay.
It is one of the facilities that's largely privately built.
Right.
And in fact, one can make the case that the infrastructure that was built really matches the infrastructure that they offer for any business. So there really was no special treatment for the NFL here at all, something that earlier this week wasn't discussed.
And it has been said that we have the sweetest deal in the NFL.
The folks in the Washington, D.C. area might argue that their deal that they got with FedEx, where the Redskins owner put that up, did well.
Okay.
There are good deals, as Michael has said, and there's contextual deals. Now, everything deteriorates over time. They become economically obsolete. You need the $87 million. I don't know all the demand. I wasn't part of the conversation, so I don't know what was there. Is an $87 million investment worth it to the public sector in terms of the investments, the return on that investment? Well, that's a conversation that has to be had. Mm-hmm. But without knowing what went into the public's decision process and the evaluation, I want to make an error on the side that I'd like to know a lot more, because Charlotte did it well the first time. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they got that stupid that quickly. So let's find out what they saw in it before we start rushing to the conclusion that this was a bad deal.
Well, the argument, of course, is that the fact that at one point before we got the Hornets, it was said by somebody in the newspaper that the only franchise that Charlotte will ever get is McDonald's. And then we got the Hornets, then we got the NFL, now we have the Bobcats and the NFL. And that's pretty remarkable for a city this size. You don't want, once you get something like that, you don't want to lose it, because that would be a deep black mark on the city's reputation. Do you think that's true?
Well, so that's a question that leadership in the city has to ask themselves. If $87.5 million to upgrade the technology at the stadium to improve the fan experience is something that's going to help keep the Panthers here long term, I don't think there are conversations for them leaving, but if it's something to keep the facility competitive and entertaining.
In exchange for the $87.5 million, and they're the Panthers are putting some money into this refurbishment as well, but in return for that, we've gotten a firm commitment that they will stay for six more years. So there's that, and then there's the fact that Jerry Richardson, who owns the team, is principal owner of the team, has said that when he dies, the team must be sold. So that doesn't bode well for their staying necessarily.
But people are a little worried about this. They have some sunk costs. Mm-hmm. It is their stadium, and so that would be a heck of an asset to walk away from.
But the stadium is, as you say, 17 years old, and there is this movement, and there has been, as you well know, around the country, that we need to continually refurbish these or rebuild these stadiums. I think there's some figures that I read yesterday that talked about the average age of a stadium 30 years ago being much older than the average age of stadia today, because we are giving them new things, because we constantly have to upgrade them to make them state of the art. Why is there this push? Most people see these games on television. They have no idea beyond the green grass what the rest of the stadium looks like.
Well, the technology and the ability to have the fan experience is dramatically changing, but it's been that way for every business. To say, well, let's focus on the NFL and not radio or television or things of this nature would be sort of foolish. The pace of change is increasing. So it's just that it's not that change is happening. Change is happening faster.
It could be argued also that the television is consumed by more people than anything in America. Maybe except for the internet. And yet when TV went high definition, nobody came in from cities and towns to help television stations upgrade their equipment.
You put that into the conversation. We'll go back to, let's not bring all the tangents. $87 million was invested. What's the public return on that investment? I don't have the answer. But one of the issues I would want to raise is that as the economy continues to decentralize, trying to keep vibrant downtowns like Charlotte vibrant and downtown, mm-hmm. Requires considerable amount of investments. Is this part of that strategy? You can't simply evaluate $87.5 million on one entity without looking at all that's taking place in downtown Charlotte. Would the loss of the team be a death knell? No. But is it part of a success story? Yes. And you don't want to mess up your success.
Dr. Mark Rosentraub, professor of sport management at the University of Michigan, is with us, along with Dr. David Swindell from Arizona State and Michael Cantor. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the UNC Charlotte Department of Theater, presenting Shakespeare's Othello, or Othello, performed by actors from the London stage, October 16th through the 19th. Tickets and info at theater.uncc.edu. And Group Benefit Solutions, providing clarity to Carolina companies uncertain about health care reform. Details available at gbs-benefits.com. Well, some post-recession sprucing up is going on around town, and we're going to look at two projects with similar goals to revitalize and to connect Charlotte. One mixes social equity, design, sustainability, even art in a mixed-income neighborhood to the north of the city. The other is a pedestrian walkway patterned after New York City's High Line, which will connect neighborhoods around South End with uptown. So we'll do that, peek into Charlotte's future, tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, every year strokes disable more than 650,000 people. New research on stroke rehabilitation and recovery.
Join us for 2 hours of the Diane Rehm Show. That's this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on listener-supported public radio, where 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins in our Spirit Square studio with Dr. David Swindell, Director of the Center for Urban Innovation and Associate Professor of Public Affairs at Arizona State University. Michael Cantor is the Project Manager for Sterling Equities. And Dr. Mark Weintraub is with the University of Michigan, a Professor of Sport Management there. They're all three in town for an economic development conference, and part of that conference is free and open to you. One of those events is at 5 p.m. today at the Charlotte Marriott City Center, Salon D, I believe. It's a full-contact economic development sports teams as city partners discussion, which is kind of the discussion that we are having here. What we hear from proponents of helping teams have stadia and helping teams come to town is that you cannot buy – a city or a region cannot buy the kind of publicity that it gets when they have a major league team. Would you agree with that?
I don't think it's worth that much, to be blunt.
Really?
Unless it's coupled with the kind of redevelopment strategy that a city like Charlotte does. So if you said, for example, that we're going to get – no business makes a relocation decision simply because they know that there's a football team in town. So take that off the table. It's just not worth debating. What is worth debating is the strategy around which the facility fits with the real estate development plan of the city and how it changes the location of economic activity. That's where the payoff is. It's not on celebrity status, things of this nature, getting the Super Bowl once every 10 years. Mm-hmm. The value is when you look at downtown Charlotte, you look at downtown Indianapolis, you look at what Cleveland's trying to accomplish, you look at the entire strategy to renovate and revitalize downtown Detroit. Sports collects a lot of people, creates a lot of activity in a downtown area. That's where the value lies. And if a city focuses on those issues, you get success. If you worry about whether or not it'll create an image, nobody makes a decision based on that.
And plus, the only time you get the city even gets seen is in the blimp shots at going into commercial breaks.
You know, one of the things we've had this conversation in Indianapolis a lot. Indianapolis has probably rebuilt a downtown in the Midwest better than anybody else has.
Okay,
which you have to ask yourself a question when you look at downtown Indianapolis: like the way it looks or not? If your answer is it's amazing, I love it, then the investments made sense. Charlotte, when the basketball team played at the near the airport, et cetera, downtown was nowhere. It was
right.
Nothing.
Right.
Look at Charlotte, downtown Charlotte today. It's probably the most vibrant city in the South, and I'd even include Atlanta in that mix because I think Charlotte's done a better job in its downtown area. You like it? If you like it, don't damage the pieces that contributed to it. Am I going to try to make the case that the Panthers changed downtown Charlotte? Of course not. But you, on the other hand, they're a part of the puzzle.
And
take a piece out, the puzzle can collapse.
Okay.
You want to take that risk? That's an issue.
Michael?
And I think that the perception that we were talking about before the break, dealing with the shelf lives of stadium shortening, mm-hmm. I think part of that has a lot to do with the fact that cities and regions made poor investments in stadiums placed in wrong areas in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. And so you've had some situations where they've had to shut down facilities earlier than they'd like to move them into a better strategically placed area, like in downtown Miami. Mm-hmm. The arena for the Miami Heat was only up for around 20 to 25 years. They made a strategic decision to knock it down, to rebuild the arena in a better place in Miami for a further vision for the city. So the arena itself was probably not obsolete at the time they decided to, but to make a better vision for Miami's future, they made a certain decision.
I think it's difficult to argue against infrastructure improvements when you build a new stadium or an arena because you've got to do things with the roads, you've got to do things with the sewer and the water pipes and the electric lines and things, which would happen, I would suppose, if you built a shopping center. That would be
exactly. Or any other business.
Exactly. But cities don't give shopping centers tax incentives or tax breaks or property easements or
depends on the business. we certainly have given incentives to businesses in other fields besides sports. It's not just sports.
So when people complain about that, what don't they understand?
I think it's that thing stores like Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops that have gone around getting major financial incentives from cities aren't on television every Sunday or don't play in the national spotlight. Mm-hmm. Their employees aren't making millions of dollars, so the initial thought process is they're probably not being subsidized or they're not getting help from cities. But if you look at the actual deal structured to incentivize multitude of businesses to return downtown, tax abatements are included. Tax increment financing is included, so there's a lot of opportunities for just normal businesses too.
The whole history of our republic is based on public-private partnerships. This country was founded on it. It's what the British did when they came here. So this notion that this is the first time we've done anything where the government does things for the private sector, that has been a founding principle of how our economy has functioned since the years before the republic, and it hasn't stopped since the republic. Now, again, do you think America's in pretty good shape? if your answer is, yeah, you know, actually it's turned out pretty well, then there is a return on the investment. But you know, focusing on the NFL, saying they're the only one, the notion is you're trying to build a tax base. At the end of the day, we have the strongest GDP in the world. The process has worked fairly well. Mm-hmm. Have there been mistakes? Well, of course there have been mistakes. These are human beings. You make good decisions, you make bad decisions. Do you have a conference to explain what went well so that you can make it better in the future? That's what we're doing today. But let's not just simply say, okay, we don't like the deal that went down in Minnesota, so therefore the entire thing is awful. Well, call the city manager up in Columbus, Ohio. Ask them how they've had a downtown area which had 2,000 people working there. They now have 15,000 people working. It's only 75 acres.
Wow.
That's an extraordinary outcome. And here's what's even funnier. The team's doing poorly, and the arena's doing poorly, but the real estate's doing extraordinarily well.
which means it pays off in taxes. From
in
all those
big
other,
dollars.
Yeah, in big dollars.
But it's more than just the tax dollars. It's more than just the return on the investment, which is how we frequently couch these incentive structures, because sports is something beyond just the money. It's part of the cultural identity of cities. It's part of the common language.
These are the intangible things that you can't put a price on.
Exactly. And so they play a role in that, and that needs to be part of that return on investment calculation, is how much do we derive from being the hometown to the Panthers. I mean, there's something that it's very difficult to monetize, but mm-hmm. it's just because it's intangible doesn't mean it's not real.
You know, and to David's point, if you came at this from a straight business thing, let the free market work, take government out of it, et cetera, the Charlotte market is not big enough to host both an NFL team and an NBA team. But you know what? People wanted it. Mm-hmm. They think it's part of what has made downtown Charlotte more successful. They actually wanted the NBA to return. Now I turn around and ask people in Charlotte, well, do you think it was worth it? If you think it was worth it, then what you get, you got to pay for. You got it. And by the way, Charlotte is a spectacular downtown. I don't want – it's a very – all these downtowns, as the economy decentralizes, other than the super cities mm-hmm. like New York or Chicago, mm-hmm. it's a very fragile economy to make sure it stays together. Be careful taking one piece out of the puzzle. It can collapse.
Okay. You already answered my next question, which was going to be, how long has this been going on, the subsidization of sports teams for their buildings? But Greg Easterbrook's book about football, he makes the case that in the beginning of the NFL and the AFL, it could be argued successfully that these teams did not have enough money to build their own stadia, and they had to have help. If you wanted a football team, you had to help them build a place to play. But now they do. They're multi-billion-dollar enterprises, and they could build their own buildings. So why don't they?
Well first, let's correct some of the history. Actually, if you wanted to be more accurate, when the NFL and its predecessor was established, the teams actually did pay for their own facilities. Here's the difference that Craig might have wanted to make his point if he had a little bit more time. At that point in time, the teams located where they wanted to go. now cities have a vested interest in trying to dictate where they would like the cities to play, the teams to play in the cities. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to get somebody to move around where you want them to be as opposed to where they want to be, that requires a partnership. As I always said, you know, the best example would be the Detroit Red Wings. If you came down from Mars and you said, where's the best place to play in the Detroit metropolitan region, it would not be downtown Detroit. But you know what? It's really important to the state of Michigan that they do play in downtown Detroit. And I think all of us would agree that bringing about 1 million people to hockey games and other entertainment events may well help the future of Detroit. So we want to create a partnership that gets the Red Wings where they're located. When the NBA was located outside of downtown Charlotte, as Michael pointed out, that was a bad decision. It wasn't in the best interest of Charlotte. Where the team is playing now is in the best interest of Charlotte. If you want them to change where they locate their business, why isn't a partnership valuable? And then how do we measure the return on that investment?
The two of you, and I suppose Dr. David Swindell, you're involved in this too, but I know for a fact that Michael Cantor and Dr. Rosentraub are involved in negotiations and planning.
He's been involved with it since he was 14.
Okay, all right. But with teams and with municipalities,
right.
Where the average person is not privy to the conversations that go on behind this. What's discussed in these meetings? How do you get people to come to the how do you reach the agreement?
I think it all starts with what are the goals? An honest conversation between private sector, which is the franchise owners and the teams, and the public sector officials that are trying to come to a deal for the betterment of a region or a city to figure out, okay, have an honest conversation and figure out what are we hoping to gain from this project? What are our realistic expectations? So when you're coming together at the table and you're starting with some realistic goals and expectations for outcomes, the conversation goes much better and it follows along the path that's best for development, and you come out with fair outcomes because everyone's honest and upfront. It's when you get in this public relations war where conversations don't seem to be going on, like you hear about in Minnesota. They're trying to audit the Wolves' financial statements, but they're not coming through. That contention doesn't help when you get into a boardroom or when you get into a conversation to come out to a deal that's best for everybody. And ultimately, when feelings are hurt, the deal probably won't work out best for everyone involved.
And that's the same that you said with any business when they're negotiating with the city to relocate, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's the same dynamic. And you're looking at the NFL as a business in that context. Whenever you're entering that kind of public-private partnership, that kind of open, honest conversation is going to be tantamount to having a successful outcome.
But sports franchises do have there's a show business thing to it that you know. Hearst Celanese wouldn't have, for instance, not just to put a name out there. That seems to give them more leverage because they come with sparkle and
it's a sexy industry.
Yeah. Sure.
I agree with all that. Real estate development around the facilities creates tremendous amount of revenue streams for the owners. So there are really opportunities. Cities have to, as we'll talk about today, have to understand where the revenue streams are that benefit the owner, where are the revenue streams that benefit the city, and do the deal. One of the questions I get asked a lot of times is, how come Los Angeles doesn't have an NFL team? Well, it's because the city of Los Angeles has never had its conditions met by the NFL, and you know what? They walked away. And they have walked away for almost two decades. So when people tell me, well, cities always lay down. Yeah. You know what? Los Angeles has never laid down.
But L.A. doesn't need to lay down.
Well, again, if the return is not exactly the right thing, then you walk away from the deal. That's the lesson to be learned. If the return, as Michael said, you have the goals. If your goals are not being met, walk away.
So are these conversations between teams and cities easier, different when you're trying to attract a team versus trying to renegotiate the deal, such as what Charlotte just went through, which some of these other cities have gone through to help upgrade stadia or whatever it may be that the teams want or need or the cities want or need? Is it a more difficult conversation the second or third time around?
Again, I've been doing this for cities and for teams and for leagues for longer than I care to admit, but it's coming up on 30 years. The principles are the same. If the deal works, the deal works. Okay. If it doesn't work, walk away.
A couple of things that have come in, questions and comments that have come in while we've been talking. Bo in Charlotte says, why aren't the PSL, the personal seat license owners, on the hook for the $87 million? They are the ones actually using the stadium, and I've heard that argument many, many times.
If you do a PSL, all you're basically doing is raising the price of tickets. It's just taking the money up front. So what the caller is asking is, why don't we simply just charge higher ticket prices? Mm-hmm. Again, that's a fair question. I wasn't part of the conversations. I don't know. The issue, again, would say, what's the team putting in? What's the public sector putting in? What's the team getting? What's the public sector getting? We can't answer that person's question until we had the city leadership of Charlotte and understood what their plan was and what is the return that they perceive that they're getting.
Is part of the reason that we can – this is an ongoing conversation here, and I'm sure it is around the country. It's controversial. Is part of the reason for that that people are not being told enough what they're getting out of it? In other words, the city of Charlotte, the people who run the city or the county of Mecklenburg, they know what the economic impact of having these – teams are and what it's done for the tax base of a city that can no longer annex. So we have to
And that's a vital point that you need to make sure people understand what the implications
that's
of
that's changed.
Right. So and we've talked about that on other programs about other kinds of development, that since we can no longer annex, we have to maximize the return on investment for what we have here.
Correct.
Now, so is part of the problem that people don't get the message? It's not being transmitted to them.
Less than 0.5% of America understands how cities are financed.
That's a pretty optimistic number.
Really?
0.5% of America. You might be overshooting that.
Overshooting it. And what was delivered and what was said and what the city manager tried to get out or didn't get out, I wasn't here. I don't know.
Right.
You know the answer to that question. But the point that what you've just stated may be the most important point of this entire debate about the $87 million. Did the leadership, the elected leadership and the appointed leadership of Charlotte, come to the conclusion that relative to the fact that they cannot annex and they have to raise the values of property in the downtown area, was this the best use of money? And if the answer that they went to was yes, it is, then the return is the escalation of property values.
Is the other part of the problem, part of it's education, part of it's the transmission of information to people who don't understand, and the other part is that we live now in a bipolar political universe, mm-hmm. where there's a certain contingent of people who simply say no to anything that involves spending taxpayer dollars for anything other than sweeping the streets. And they don't want to hear that message. Is that part of the problem too?
It's an easy target. It's an easy target to go after sports teams and these agreements for people that have that point of view. It's just a simple target. It's in the news cycle all the time. They're constantly coming up in conversation. It's not like a subsidy or a public-private partnership would happen and then it would go away like another business. A business has agreed to come downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be around for a while, and they don't have to do it again. So sports teams is always in the news cycle, and I think that's why it always comes up.
We have to take a break. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Coca-Cola Recycle and Win, an environmental partnership with the City of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County municipalities designed to support and increase recycling in our region. Details at CokeRecycleAndWin.com. And Mr. Rogers Windows, a locally family-owned business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. Every year, strokes disable more than 650,000 people, and guest host Susan Page is in today on the Diane Rehm Show to talk about new research on stroke rehabilitation and recovery. That's in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation about the impact of sports on economic development and whether the trade-off is worth the money spent, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a good place to start, and we are coming right back.
To give you more programming and less fundraising, we're encouraging you to pledge your support now to help shorten our fall fundraiser. Every dollar received before the campaign will go toward the $550,000 goal. And for every $55,000 raised, we'll take a day off the fund drive. You'll also be enrolled in a drawing for a trip for two to Hawaii. No pledge is necessary to enter. Pledge your support today at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE, the entertaining conversation off the air. We need to put it on the air now. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Dr. David Swindell with Arizona State University, Michael Cantor, Project Manager for Sterling Equities, and also with Sterling Project Development, and Dr. Mark Rosentraub, Professor of Sport Management at the University of Michigan. We're talking about the value of sports enterprises to a city and vice versa, and there's a conference on this today that's open to the public and free at 5 at the Charlotte Marriott City Center. Full contact economic development sports teams as city partners. Let's talk about Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys, for just a second, because as you said off the air a second ago, Dr. Rosentraub, this is a good example of where a city did decide it wasn't worth it, and they didn't want the team to stay. Irving, Texas.
Right. The land that where Texas Stadium stood had risen in value to the point that the best decision for Irving, knowing that the Cowboys, of course, were not going to leave the region, was to encourage them to look elsewhere. And of course, they did. Their first hope was to return to Dallas. Didn't work out that deal. Arlington was willing to sacrifice its scarce resource of land for the stadium, and they'll have to decide whether their investment was worth it. Irving made the decision that they would rather put that land into real estate development.
But when you have when your town is called Irving, shouldn't you be doing everything in your might to get the Dallas Cowboys to play there?
Isn't that interesting that the leadership of the city of Irving and their management team came to the conclusion that the real estate development was far more valuable? Isn't that fascinating?
And actually,
a city doing the job well.
Okay. And Arlington gave away. I mean, that stadium is huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a monster stadium. Mm-hmm. And it displaced several businesses that were there before. So Arlington, it wasn't just the amount of money that Arlington kicked in. It was also the businesses that were displaced in order to put that stadium there. So they were – that as a real estate transaction, you're hoping to get a higher return on that land than was already going on. But it wasn't like that. It was just vacant, unused property.
But this is the point, and what David's accomplished in having this conference today is that you never heard the story. It's not in the book that was discussed this week, that Irving walked away.
Right.
And like you said, isn't that amazing? A city with the silly name of Irving comes to the conclusion that, you know what, we can make a lot more money. And so it's been a great partnership. We love the team.
Sayonara.
We are great fans. But you ought to go back to Dallas. Or when that didn't work out, they didn't counter. When Dallas turned it down, which I don't think was the right decision, but they did what they had to do, Irving didn't say, oh, we'll, stick around.
Uh-huh. Wow. All right, a couple more comments that have come in while we're talking. Doug on Twitter, it's a ridiculous price, referring to the $87.5 million. We need that money to repair our roads. The stadium is too new to renovate. It can wait.
Again, he has me at a big disadvantage because I really don't know.
All right. David, do you know some of this?
Question for the elected officials.
You're not just in Arizona. You used to be here.
The conversations with some of the folks that have been involved with this, and in the conference this afternoon, we may be at the meeting this afternoon at 5 o'clock at the Marriott. We'll have the deputy city manager will be with us. He may be able to give us a more specific answer to that very question. But some of the conversations that I had with some of the folks was that, if we're going to put together a bid for the Super Bowl, the stadium has to meet certain NFL requirements. And those escalators, if you've ever walked up to the upper decks, it's a long walk, having done that many times. It's
good exercise.
It's excellent exercise that a lot of people don't want to have to do.
That's right.
And the NFL is very, they've got some very clear requirements for stadiums that are going to be hosting the Super Bowl. And that's part of that arrangement.
But that's one Sunday.
Yep.
In a million.
It's a big Sunday, though.
Okay. Well, it's actually a big week. It's not actually.
Yeah, it's not just
exactly
one.
Right.
It is. It's a big
exactly.
event.
And it does bring it's like the Democratic National Convention.
Exactly. I always try to say, if you ask what's the value of having the Democratic National Convention from an economic standpoint, probably not very much.
Right.
But if you want to have it, and then there's good reasons to have it and there's bad reasons to have it. You want to have the Super Bowl or not? It's literally like the DNC.
Which we'll
Except,
be talking
by the
about.
Way, it gets more coverage than the DNC.
It's very true. Yeah, and we'll be actually talking about that right before the sports panel. We're having a panel on having hosted the DNC because having done that and having done it successfully is why we're in a much better position now to go after the Super Bowl.
Okay. Amanda on Twitter, why use public funds at all? The Baltimore Ravens just updated their stadium for $35 million, all private money.
Do remember, again, history and context, the facility that the Ravens play in was 100% financed by the public sector.
Yeah, through the Maryland Stadium Authority. So I'm sure this renovation, when the conversation came up, it was time for money to come in from the other side. So like we've harped on a lot today, every deal is different. Every project has its own intricacies and difficulties that you have to go through and examine. So just looking at a number and putting it on upgrades – isn't going to tell the story, and so it's difficult to make conjectures that way.
It's interesting if you look historically at the stadiums from like the 60s and 70s,
right.
Almost all of them publicly financed, right. Completely publicly financed. But the rental arrangements, again, getting to the specific deals, the rental arrangements were such that the teams were covering the cost for the cities to pay for those. So the financing was put up front by the cities, it was built by the cities, but the rent that the teams were paying covered all those costs. So it was just a different way of doing these public-private partnerships that have changed today, and now we're looking at a different phase, and it varies from city to city.
Dennis, a PSL owner in Iredell County, says, I think that the city of Charlotte should give the Panthers whatever monies are needed to improve the stadium and keep the Panthers in Charlotte.
Does that include for defensive linemen? Or
Well, maybe that would be a good investment.
Now, you brought up, Michael, something interesting. We fixated. Well, the NFL's they're the big kahuna. They drive everything. Football drives everything. It's a cult. It is America's sport. We have a love affair with football from high school up. So football controls the conversation. But there are other sports facilities and other kinds of sports that do command the city's attention. We have the Bobcats, soon to be Hornets, and we have built an arena for the NFL to attract the NBA back to town. We are helping to move the Charlotte Knights back to town from Fort Mill. They'll play their first game, I think, in April in their new ballpark uptown. There's a difference in building a ballpark for baseball and an arena for basketball, which can also be used for concerts, and the football stadium, because they're used all the time.
It's really a conversation for where do you want to spend your money for generating as much foot traffic and activity for your downtowns. Do you want a facility that's going to be active 10 to 15 event nights a year like an NFL stadium would be with lots of attendance, usually on Sunday when some businesses like to close down or aren't that busy? Or do you want a facility that's going to be active 81 days a year like a baseball stadium just for baseball or an arena which can be active, and successful arenas are working 120 to 150 nights a year. So for a downtown business owner, having that foot traffic come downtown, a guarantee of 120 to 150 nights a year, can be a real economic boost for a region.
But do the people who come downtown, for instance, for the Bobcats games, or even for the concerts that are held in that arena when the Bobcats aren't playing, do they come downtown, park the car, buy a hot dog at the concession stand, watch the game or the concert, walk back to their car, and go home? Are they really coming downtown to have dinner at a restaurant before the game or the show?
The answer to your question is, again, how do you do the real estate development? But the best answer to the question is LA Live and Staples Center. The amount of foot traffic that generates by a kind of amenities that were built across from Staples Center has changed downtown Los Angeles tremendously. In an area and a region, by the way, where getting anybody to go to downtown LA was an extraordinary challenge. If you build the facility and you leave it like a flying saucer, like the AT&T Stadium, the Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, you're not going to get any kind of development.
And that includes even the baseball stadium, because the Rangers Stadium, which is right next door to the Cowboy Stadium, again, you're in the sea of concrete.
Right.
There's nothing to go do except the game. So, yeah, you park, you go to the stadium,
like
and
the
you
old,
get out.
It's like the old Coliseum.
They're in the middle between two cities, and Arlington's there in the middle. So there's just not a whole lot to do versus centering it in a dynamic urban space that makes a lot more sense.
I represented the team's interests, but when we did the ballpark district in San Diego, we generated $2 billion of real estate sales because of the way in which we designed the neighborhood and this foot traffic that Michael's talking about. So when people say it can't be done, it's done in the Arena District in Columbus, cold weather climate. It's done in San Diego, warm weather climate.
So if you do it right, you can offset whatever cost people are complaining about and make money in the process.
Back to Michael's point, put out the goals, work your plan, and it works.
I wouldn't want to make the statement that you can definitely offset. It all really depends. It depends on how the deal is structured and what your goals are. Any type of normative statement that this is right and this is wrong or ought statements about, I think, are terrible to make in these situations. And I think that's where the confusion comes up.
But back to your point, solving these issues for a football stadium is more difficult because of the fact that they typically tend to be larger. Mm-hmm. And second of all, they're only used a fewer number of days.
We witnessed a team leaving because we wouldn't do what they asked us to do. The Hornets, George Shinn, when he owned the Hornets, wanted skyboxes. He wanted us to renovate the Coliseum or build him a new building because they found that they couldn't renovate the Coliseum mm-hmm. to the degree that the NBA wanted. Mm-hmm. And we said no. And he took the team to New Orleans, and then we thought, oh, gosh, we need a team.
What did we do? The fans in Seattle are asking themselves probably the same question right now with the Supersonics.
Or was the question really the owner as opposed to
– Oh, that was part of the deal. Of the problem was one of the fell out of love with George Shinn. That's part of the problem.
And it was also the same issue that happened in the relationship between the Houston Oilers uh-huh. and the city of Houston. Mm-hmm. That because of the fact that the owner's behavior was something that people didn't want to do business with. Mm-hmm. And I point this out again as being an example. Charlotte did it right. Different owner. I don't think the Hornets left. But they didn't like the partnership. Mm. They walked away. So when people tell me that Charlotte never did it well, I say, oh, really? They actually let the NBA walk away.
And then got the relocation that they wanted.
Exactly.
And when we say they... Who are we talking? Who are they?
City manager,
officials.
You're elected and appointed officials. So before we start, let's bring out the tar because they gave $87 million. I want to point out the fact that this city has probably done sports about as well as anyone. And when the deal wasn't right, they walked away. So before I'm going to say this was a really bad deal, yeah. I'm going to say, wait a second, let's look at the body of work. These folks did it well several times. Are you really sure they didn't do it well this time?
And for people who you are not convincing through this conversation, and there are many, I'm sure, who just simply will not see that side of the conversation, the only way to stop this practice, this negotiation to get teams to come or to stay once they've arrived, is to have every city in the country say, we're not doing this anymore because – you're in competition. It's a marketplace.
And also to recognize again that this country was built on public-private partnerships. It began when the British started in the 1600s. Stop focusing on the fact that the reality of this country has been a public-private partnership since the Dutch.
Give me an example of a public-private partnership in 1680 or whatever it was.
The leases that were given for the development, what was called New Amsterdam, was that in exchange for protection from offering military service, the leaseholders had to provide the crown of the Netherlands a certain fee for the development of the land. Goes back to the founding.
Okay. And the situation you described is a prisoner's dilemma situation where you're going to have people defecting mm-hmm. and getting
one
those
city.
Assets.
So all the cities agree to disarm, and one city says, but wait, we'll give you this deal.
Yes, exactly right. And it's an artificial marketplace because the NFL and the NBA and the Major League Baseball deliberately limit the number of cities who can have teams.
But also remember, the cities that have teams want that limit strictly enforced.
Sure they do.
Right. So it's a partnership.
Okay. Getting back to new facilities, whether it be a baseball stadium or a football stadium or an arena for basketball, is there any empirical evidence whatsoever that having a good, new, brand, state-of-the-art, sparkling building helps these teams to play better? The New York Giants would have played last Sunday in Charlotte if we played at Memorial Stadium. It doesn't matter. They would play because that's the deal. So does it really matter? We're not going to attract a different caliber of team. They're going to come. Well, and does it make the home team play better?
I don't necessarily – from playing better or worse, no. But from a free agency standpoint – so I'll give you a recent example if you think for the Detroit Red Wings are playing in a old building. Joe Louis Arena was built in the 60s, mm-hmm. having tons of problems. But their issues are in – getting free agents to come sign now to play in an old, decrepit building. They lost out on two major free agents that they thought they had or hoped they would have to the Minnesota Wild.
So the players don't want to come.
It's the same issue with
– Do you want to go work? Do you want to do radio in a building where the toilets don't work or you're in Oakland and you're having sewage run up through your dugouts? Probably not.
Been there, done that. So no, thank you very much.
Yeah, and again, every business – the success of every business is based on the personnel and the labor
talent.
that they can hire and retract. And if the building looks bad, and like Michael said, we actually have facilities where you've got sewage running through the facility. A lot of the employees will say, like you just said, been there, done that.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Well, I've actually been backstage at a lot of arenas around the country because of some other peripheral things that I do other than this show, and it's shocking to me in some of these places.
It's a labor retention issue.
What it's like.
The bowels aren't
so
pretty when
you
get there.
No, it's not. They're not. Even the stadium itself is not so pretty in some cases. Van Gogh on Twitter, what does Charlotte need to host a Super Bowl to meet NFL requirements?
There are two sets of things that you have to have. One is certain seating capacity, an amenity package inside the stadium, and you have to have, as you did for the DNC, a certain number of hotel rooms within 30 miles of the facility. By doing the DNC, Charlotte has addressed that concern. They do have enough hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the kind of facilities around the stadium that will essentially allow the NFL to do what they call the fan experience the entire 1 week.
Right.
They need a set of amenities inside the stadium. That's a decision for Charlotte to decide.
Does the $87.5 million help achieve that inside
the
stadium?
Oh, yeah, there are typical upgrades, but there are the amenities also that they go for the Super Bowl.
And, of course, this would be to upgrade this stadium. The next thing is to build the new stadium, and that's another conversation. Dr. David Swindell with Arizona State University, Michael Cantor with Sterling Equities, and Dr. Mark Rosentraub with the University of Michigan. Today at 5, a free conference that will continue this conversation at the Charlotte Marriott City Center. Full contact economic development sports teams as city.